tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. This is the fourth talk of the Range Retreat for 2004. Range Retreat is already almost a month gone. It doesn't get better than this when it comes to the opportunities to practice. So one should always recall the opportunities one has and to put everything one has got into the practice. And whatever duties you have to do, do it thoroughly. And when there's nothing to do, then do nothing. Be able to sit in one's hut or walk on one's meditation path and enjoying the freedom of having to do nothing. So often that we have to go in the direction of working, performing responsibilities. And sometimes that we just long and aspire to these opportunities we have in a monastery such as this, which is so well supported, so well established, so well looked after, there's nothing much we have to do. So when you're in your hut and have those opportunities, make sure you put great effort into doing nothing. Still too many people do things. You only have to look in that sutta we're going to chant next week, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which I keep stressing, that each of these khandhas, the body, the vedana, your pleasure and pain, you know, your perceptions, your will, the jhana of the sankharas, and even consciousness itself, is out of your control. There's no self in there which controls these things. The Buddha said in that sutra, if any of these khandhas were a self, you'd be able to say, oh, may my consciousness be like this. Oh, may it not be like that. Oh, may my feeling be such. May my pleasure and pain not be like that. The Buddha said, because it's anatta, you cannot do that. You cannot control those things. It's a powerful statement which the Buddha said, which you should reflect upon again and again. The truth of anatta. You may not have seen anatta, the non-self, but at least you can have faith in the Buddha's teachings, so clear, repeated so many times, that these five khandhas are nothing to do with you. They're out of your control. So why, when you meditate, do you try controlling these things? Why do you actually try pushing and pulling that mind to be just as you want it to be, to get rid of this and to get hold of that? Surely that you should get the message by now. It's in the suttas, if you don't believe what Ajahn Brahm says, that the more the one controls, the more the one is going against the Buddha's advice. So our path of practice should be to be able to sit down there and learn what it means to let go, to go in the opposite direction of the asavas, the outflowings, to sit and be patient. Problem is that people don't know how to be truly patient. Whenever you're sitting down there doing nothing, you're wanting something. That craving and that desire which come up, which takes you away from this moment, from going inwards. Remember, wanting is that force which takes you away from whatever you're experiencing now. It's wanting to go into something in the future, some fantasy or dream. Remember, the jhanas, enlightenment, according to the Sapurusa Sutta, whatever you imagine it to be, it's always something else. Yang yang manyati tang tang anyata, or something like that. I think that's pretty accurate. Whatever you imagine it to be, it's otherwise. So how can you actually want anything when you're not really sure what you're wanting? Sometimes we have that simile which is in the suttas of the person who's fallen in love with the most beautiful girl in the country but doesn't know what she looks like or where she lives or what her name is, or even if she exists. And some monks, novices, anagarikas in this monastery have already fallen in love with nimittas and jhanas, even though they don't know what they are, where they are, if they even exist or not. So why are you craving for something which you don't know? Leave that all alone. Let it go. So there's no wanting at all. So the mind is content, is still, is peaceful. Your whole job in this meditation retreat is just to be peaceful, to be still. Make that your goal. Not jhana, not nimittas, not enlightenment. But make your goal being as peaceful as you possibly can, to lessening those desires, to stop the mind moving, to keep it still, to stop the causes of the mind being disturbed, which is you getting in control and wanting things. Remember, the greatest controller of all is Mara. In that Dhammacakka Sutta, the Mara lives in that paranimitta vasavati realm, the realm where they wield power over others' creations, others' nimittas. It's almost like the control freak. Know that control freak within you, that Mara is that doer inside of you, which is always trying to push you and pull you and say, come on, don't get so sleepy. Come on, put forth some effort. Come on, get into a jhanas. Come on, who do you think you are? How long have you been a monk? How long have you got left on your retreat? Come on, get going. That's Mara. Check out that Mara. And all you need to do is to know Mara. I know you, Mara. And then Mara disappears. If you don't know Mara, if you don't know that control freak within you, you'll always get tense, frustrated. You can practice for years and years and years. You get close, because Mara gives you little crumbs every now and again. But you never get the full meal. Never get the jhanas. Remember, the jhanas are places where Mara can't go. Where Mara is blindfolded, as it says. These are places where just Mara is banned. Why? Because anyone who's experienced a jhana knows in those states there's no control left. The potential to do is gone. That potential to do is Mara. So that are you giving Mara an opportunity when you're meditating? Are you just getting in control, trying to steer this meditation, do it this way and do it that way? If you are, you'll find you don't get peaceful. So I said to someone in the questions or interviews that you know if you're going in the right direction, because it leads to peace, it leads to the sense of freedom, this inner happiness. You relax. This was the Buddha's advice both to Upali and to Mahapajapati, the first bhikkhuni. Said, you know what the Dhamma and the Vinaya is of the Buddha. The Dhamma, the truth, the Vinaya, the training. If it leads to things like dispassion, if it leads to upasama. Upasama is this beautiful word meaning like the peace, the quietness, the stillness. When things settle down, when there's no more business. And you can understand what that really means, because when you're meditating, you experience that peace, that upasama sukha, the happiness of just peace. Just being still, there's nothing to do, no burdens. You're resting, the mind is resting, not just the body resting. Then you know that that is the path, that's the Dhamma and the Vinaya of the Buddha. He made it very clear. What leads to peace is the Dhamma. So use that as your check to make sure you're going in the right direction. See how peaceful you can become. Don't just see how much you can crave and how much willpower you can develop, but just see how much peace power you can develop. Sure, that as I mentioned before, sometimes when you start with this way of peace, you have to go through dullness. That's just old karma. Bear with that. It will disappear. When it disappears, you get energy. This beautiful energy, not the restless energy which comes from struggling and fighting. But this beautiful, peaceful energy, you built up that peace. One of the great results of that peace is you do get this fabulous mindfulness. During one of the interviews, that someone reminded me that I was talking about superpower mindfulness, and it's one of the ways of developing is by this thing I call total listening. When whatever you're doing, you're totally being there. Just because like listening is an important sense faculty, total listening is a great metaphor for this very brilliant mindfulness. So whatever you're doing, you're totally listening to what's happening. Even when you're doing the present moment, you're totally there. totally listening, totally feeling, putting 100% of the mind into the moment. When you get the idea of what I mean by totally listening, you understand what this mindfulness is and how it does become powerful. When you say totally listening, you give it everything you've got, but then you find you have more to give your mindfulness, your alertness. You feel more deeply, you know more powerfully. And the mindfulness starts to grow and grow and grow. But it always grows because you're not doing anything. The mind is still. It's not going away from this. When you look at this thing we call time, time only moves because of craving, because of doing things. When you stop doing things, when you stop planning, when you stop hurrying and hastening through the round of rebirths, when you stop that hurrying and hastening, the time stops. You know, this beautiful timelessness. Whenever you want something, you already made the future. What it's going to be like? What's going to happen next? Where are you going to go next? When you just start getting into ill will or guilt, you start looking at the past. It's all just craving or ill will. That's why I said the present moment, that's a place which you can know is free from those things. Craving and ill will, once they stop, time stops. And all this idea of where you're going, what you're going to do next, just disappears. The mind becomes still in time. This beautiful timeless presence. And those of you who've got into deep meditation, you know what that feels like. Time has no meaning anymore. You sit for hours or minutes and who cares? You don't really know. And just look at your clock and you haven't got a clue that so many hours have gone past. Because time has lost its meaning. And you're free from that burden. So of Mara, he's the person inside the wristwatch, inside the clock, ticking over, trying to control you. But when you go beyond time, then Mara already is getting very worried. Can't go into such places or goes in there with difficulties. So remember just to, when you're meditating, when you're walking, whatever you're doing, see if you can allow that stillness, that peace, that stillness in time to develop and develop and develop. So you just don't know what hour of the day it is. You just get up in the morning, you just meditate. Who cares what time it is? If you're tired, you can go back to bed again. Who cares what time it is? Don't count how many hours you sleep. Don't count how many hours you meditate. Just get rid of that time business. You just moment. You get rid of all of these things all the time. Even, what is it in the Bhadirakata Sutta? That's what it says. Give out the past, give out the future. In the Dhammapadas, give up the past, give up the future, and then give up the present. There's the next thing to give up. Give up all time. It's in one of the Dhammapada verses, which someone pointed out a week or two ago. And if you can start to do that, giving up time, giving up fully, reflect on what that means. Use your insight practice to understand what timelessness truly is. And you'll understand just how freeing that is. And straight away you've got a perspective, a reflection, which helps your meditation. The reflection of timelessness. Akalika. No time. So, when we're meditating, we can use these little words like timeless. No time. Free of time. There's ways to remind us, to point the mind in directions which help the meditation. Timelessness, total listening, fully alert, fully aware, in this very moment. Craving and ill will, that takes us away from this moment. It takes us away from where we're supposed to be going, inside of everything. And if we keep being taken away, we never get into the jhanas, we never get enlightened. We're always going somewhere else, never right inside. Later on during the retreat, you start talking about the citadels of the self, the knower and the doer. That's right in the center of this. To get close to that is just so difficult because the doer is always pushing you away. It doesn't really want to be seen for what it truly is, just a phantom, just a fake. And that's why it always sort of pushes you away, so you can't understand it, see it for what it truly is. Same as a knower as well. So hard to see. But by stillness we get to understand what knowing or what doing is. You have to find that place where nothing moves. And you can understand what that is. Timelessness is one of the first places you get the feeling that nothing is moving. It's upasama, it's peaceful. Stay there. Don't do anything. Never say, what should I do next? You've lost the plot if you say, what should I do next? It's what you're doing now is the only question. What are you doing now to know more fully? Just stay with there. Be patient. Give up wanting. Give up trying to do things. Stop trying to change the five khandhas. Just leave them alone. Stop that process of Mara controlling and interfering. Mara, I know you. When Mara skulks away with head bowed, the monk, the novice, the anagarika, the layman, the laywoman, they know me. Then Mara doesn't control. You're on the way to Nibbana, the cessation of things. And when this happens, you can see the things stopping. Why are you always trying to control these things? It's all impermanent. Rises and falls despite you. If this world was under your control, you can actually control this impermanence business, this night and day, things coming and going, happiness and pleasure, dark and light. How many times have you tried to control this thing? And all that happens is it changes anyway. It's beyond you. So just anicca means uncertain, out of control, comes and goes as it wish, without you being able to force it this way and that. That's why when you have a good meditation, fine. If you have a bad meditation, fine. Don't blame yourself. Don't think you're proud because, don't get proud because you have a good meditation. Think, now I can meditate, because any one of you who've had a good meditation, now I can do it, the next one will be terrible. You've experienced that many times. Why? Because that's the nature. Anicca, that's all. Rise and falls, comes and goes. So stop messing around. Allow it to be. Be content with the bad meditations. Be content with the good meditations. As my first teacher said, there isn't actually no such thing as a bad meditation. It's a meditation. It goes according to its causes and results. How can you say the causes are, there is, because it goes according to the results of the causes, it's bad? It's just nature, that's all. It's nature doing its thing. And you just have to be part of this and let go and just enjoy the nature of just the mind just unfolding. In fact, the more you let go and get out of the way of this process, the faster and more peaceful, more beautiful it becomes, the more powerful is the path, the more you get out of the way. You disappear. You just be a nobody. Vanish into emptiness when you meditate. So there's no one in there. You can do the anatta sanya. The anatta sanya, the perception, there's no one in here. What I mean by doing these perceptions is, on the walking path, you start thinking about these. You use the thought to focus your mind on what these things mean. What did the Buddha say about anatta? What does it really mean? At least you have enough knowledge and enough faith to know that there's nobody in here. This knower is no one. It's just a process of consciousness. When forms hit the eye, and when it's a conjunction of the two, there is contact. With contact, there is a sense impression. That's all. When there's a mind object meets mind consciousness, the two come together, this mind contact. From mind contact you get mind vedana. That's all it is. So when you understand what these things are, there's nobody in here. Even if you can't know that for truth, for yourself, because you haven't seen it with wisdom yet, at least you've heard it with faith. Try that out. Imagine that there's nobody in here. Imagine there is no Ajahn Tathamala, no Ajahn Dhammananda, no Brahmali, no Dhammasiha. Imagine that thing is just not there. Imagine that. Put yourself in that position. And then meditate from that perspective of non-self, by putting that as an imaginary place from where you meditate. Because if you start your meditation with that, or start your walking meditation, there's nobody in here. That's what the Buddha said. The controller, the doer, the knower, is just a process, not a person, not a thing, not a being. Then walk. Then sit. And see what happens. When you start with that perception, a perception of true Dhamma, it's amazing just how easy it is to meditate. It's only because of delusion meditation is hard. It's only because of not seeing things clearly or forgetting that you get frustrated and lost in your meditation. If you put that anatta sanya right at the beginning there, as a way of looking, as a perspective from where to start, then how can you fail in your meditation? There's no failure at all. Who can fail? There's no one to fail. So how can you call even failure bad meditation, good meditation? All this doing and measuring and controlling is cut off just from that perspective. And when you train yourself to look at your meditation, to look at your walking meditation, to look at your sleeping, your eating, whatever else you do, from the perspective of nobody in here, and you keep that perspective throughout the day, anatta sanya, just food going into the body, that's all. There's no body tasting this food. It's just, what is it? Just tastables being tasted by the tongue. The two coming together make contact. And the contact gives a feeling. That's all it is. Keep those perspectives. It's cold. It's just body feeling cold air. Those body conscious and that object come into contact. And there's this contact, this passa, and this vedana arises as a result, because nobody feels a cold. It's just the process, that's all. It's a big deal. It's pain in the body. It's just the body base and the body consciousness. Sorry, the body consciousness and the body object. The two coming together. There's a contact, and because of that, there's the feeling. That's all it is. Look at life like that. Look at each moment like that. Remember anatta sanya. It makes life so much easier when there's no one in here. And if you do that from anatta, 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 no self, no controller, no doer, no knower, nothing in here, just emptiness, just a process. Imagine what would happen when you sit down to watch the breath. So easy to do, because there's no one doing it. It's the same that too often that when we get involved in something, we always mess it up. Just too often that just when we let the tree grow by itself, it grows very well. But when we start to mess around with it, we pull it this way, we bend it that way, we want to make it like this, we want to make it like that. When we get involved with nature, we usually mess up. This certainly is the case with my meditation. When you get involved in trying to do a little bit of controlling, it doesn't go well. It's just the same as that simile when you try and watch the breath with control, the breath is never smooth. When you just leave the breath alone, you're busy doing something else, then you don't control it at all. The breath is so smooth and natural. For many people, when they first start breath meditation, when they start watching the breath, they're controlling it at the same time, and that's why it gets uncomfortable. They can't see themselves controlling. But you know, people have asked me, so when I watch the breath, it's just so hard and painful. When I don't watch the breath, it's nice and peaceful. What's going on? I say, because when you're watching the breath, you're controlling it. Because you know, you've got into the habit, whatever you watch, you get involved in. You control it, as if whatever you watch is yours. Whatever you feel is yours. Whatever you hear is yours. Whatever you sense is yours to do something about, to control. This is what the anatta does, and how it creates the craving, the doing. So when you think, this is not mine, nothing to do with me. Just like the simile which the Buddha gave of the grass and sticks in the Jeta grove. If someone collected those and burnt them and just threw them away, who cares? It doesn't belong to you. So your meditation, does your meditation belong to you? Does your mind belong to you? Your vedana, your consciousness belong to you? Your will belong to you? Can't you look at your mind and your body just like the twigs and the leaves outside? Don't belong to you. They're not yours. So why are you striving so hard in this meditation for? What are you doing? Who's doing it and why? When you actually look at it from Dhamma, from Anatta Sanya, you can understand just what your mistake is. You're controlling things. You're building up through that control, through that striving, this huge ego and self. You become the meditator. You become the striver. You become the person who's putting all this effort into your meditation. If you do that, you find you get frustrated. Because you find that anicca means that it's so uncertain. Whatever you want it to be, it becomes something different. You just can't do it. You can't succeed in your meditation. You try for years. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes it doesn't get right. What am I doing wrong? Answer, nothing. Or rather, answer, you're doing. That's what's wrong. Leave it alone. Don't do anything. Disengage. Detach. Renounce. Second factor of the Eightfold Path. Right intention. Samma Sankappa. The first one is Nekamma Sankappa. This thought, this intention to renounce. What a beautiful word that is, to renounce. Have you renounced yet? Some of you are monks, and in many countries you say, oh, you will renounce it, you've renounced. But you've only renounced some things. Maybe you've renounced TV, maybe you've renounced sex. There's many other things you've yet to renounce. Renounce your body. Renounce your mind. Renounce your meditation. So you just let go. Mind, whatever you want to do, fine. Because you don't belong to me. Mind, you're just like the twigs and the grass of the Jeta Grove. Don't belong to me. Nothing to do with me. You are not mine. Because the Buddha said there's nothing which is mine or belongs to me. So why don't you just abandon? Let go of this. If you can do that, it doesn't mean you just abandon meditation and sleep all day. You abandon sleep as well. You abandon everything. Just the abandonment becomes just the movement of the mind, which frustrates the controller, Mara. Nekamma is the metal stake through the heart of the demon, Mara. It kills Mara. Because Mara can't stand this renunciation. You give up, renounce, abandon. Because with that renunciation in your meditation, you just sit there and renounce. This isn't mine, nothing to do with me. Because of that renunciation, because of that non-doing, because of that non-controlling, the reason why the mind moves is taken away. The reason why the mind is restless, why it's tired, the underlying causes of the hindrances are seen and abandoned. And the hindrances just unravel. Sensory desire, where can that come from? Ill will, gone. Restlessness is doing things. Well, kukucha, worry about the past, who cares what happened about the past, that's all gone. Sloth and torpor, that just fades away. As I've said, the cause of sloth and torpor is too much doing. You're tired. You think a lot. You sort of do the work, you know, especially the work in offices or the work of being an abbot. The more you have to do, the more tired that mind becomes, that mind nature. You don't do anything. The mind just gets so bright. Bright days when I'm on retreat. The days, the afternoons or the mornings when you just sit there doing nothing. All the energies start to build up. You can feel these energies building up. And they build up because you just sit there doing nothing. You just watch all the energy of your life just going into knowing. And you're very careful not to allow any of it to get into controlling or doing anything. As an abbot, that's a have to do that the rest of the day. This is a time for non-doing, non-controlling. It's a time when I meditate, I'm not an abbot. I'm not in charge. It's a time when I completely want to go and abandon. As the Buddha said in the Indriya Sanyutta, it's if you make wasagga ramana karitawa labati samadhing labati chitte kakatang. If you make this abandoning the main thing, make it your aramana, your mind state of abandoning, you attain samadhi, you attain one-pointedness of mind. That's what the Buddha said. The Buddha doesn't say things if they don't work. You make abandoning. Abandon all this doing business and measuring and good and bad and I'm in control of this meditation, I'm going to do it. Abandon all of that. And then the Buddha said, you get samadhi, you get one-pointedness of mind. Try it, it works. If you've got the guts to go against Mara. Trouble is, we just still get in there and control a little bit. Still, we want to be the one who's doing this. You want to be the one who gets the jhana. But you can't do it. When you disappear, when you get out of the way, when you give up all hope, all wanting, then those things happen. Real letting go. Real renunciation. Real nekama. That's what is needed. So we can use anatta-sanya to help us push that letting go button. We just fill our mind just with non-self. The Buddha's teachings on anatta-lakkhana-sutta. These five khandhas, they're not mine. So what is this thing you're trying to control? You're trying to control things which just do not belong to you. Get out of the way. No wonder you get frustrated. No wonder suffering comes. You're trying to control things which aren't yours. What do you expect to suffer? Because you're just doing things which are just absolutely stupid. And there's that delusion, it's just so thick with many of us. You keep on meditating and then you come and complain to me, it's not working, you're fed up, rah, 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 rah. And just, how stupid can you be? How can there be suffering for you when you disappear and there's no one left? Then it's not suffering anymore, it's just cause and effect, just the world coming, the world going, five khandhas going around. Now it's happy, now it's sadness, but there's no mental suffering left. You've let go, you've disengaged. You're disengaged from samsara, from the world. These five khandhas are just the world of the five khandhas. Nothing to do with you, it's just khandhas, that's all. It's just like the weather, storms, and then there's sunshine, and then there's rain, and then there's wind, and then there's peace again, and then there's cold, and then there's heat, blah, blah. You can't control these things, so why don't you just shut up and just stop arguing with nature. Stop arguing with the nature of your body, with the nature of your mind. Do you know what I mean by arguing? That argument which keeps on going, come on, get in there, do some meditation. That's not good enough. That was a good one. Come on, the next one will be a good one. Come on, meditate longer. Don't sleep so much. Don't get this way. You're arguing with yourself. Or rather, you're arguing with nature, with your non-self. Forget all of that. Abandon, let go. Sit there and do nothing. You find that the mind does start to get still. Simply because the five hindrances are being undermined. The five hindrances, these are the cause for the lack of samadhi. The lack of samadhi is not caused because you haven't got enough effort. For most people in the West, you've got too much effort. You just don't know how to let go, how to relax. Lack of samadhi is caused by the hindrances being too active. So, put your focus on what those hindrances are and how they're caused, where they come from, and why. The hindrances are also the fuel for avijja, for delusion. Because this is what the Buddha said, that delusion hasn't got a cause, as it were, but it's fuel. The more those hindrances are there, the more delusion is solidified and strengthened and kept on going. And so by abandoning those hindrances, and by abandoning the underlying cause of those hindrances, the doing, coming from a sense of self, me in control, you'll find that the delusion sort of vanishes, just like the mist in the morning just dissipates and you can start to see again. It's clear. And this is what happens when you start abandoning hindrances through some of these reflections on anicca, anatta, or even dukkha. Keep those clear in your mind. Hindrances haven't got much of a chance. When those hindrances aren't there, then there's nothing between the mind and jhanas. You know that. That's what the sutras say. That's what the Kubba Rajans say. You've heard that from me many times. Many of you know that as an experience for yourself. When hindrances go, you get into deep meditations, even into jhanas. So those hindrances are the problem. It's not you, your ability or lack of ability. It's not because you're not trying hard enough, you're not meditating hard enough. Look at what the hindrances are. Focus on them. Understand them. Get to know them. They are the enemies. They're the ones which need to be overcome, and understand how to overcome them. There's this craving and ill will, just doing things all the time. Present moment awareness, silence, just that undermines those two. You get into present moment awareness and silence, those two are just almost dead. Your restlessness is almost gone as well. And this sleepiness which many of you complain about, don't worry about that one. Don't worry about anything, because worrying is just more controlling. Just that's old karma. You've done too much. You're tired. The mind is not bright. Its mindfulness is weak, simply because you haven't been putting energy into the right place. So just allow it to be. Be with sloth and torpor. If you really just leave it alone, it just vanishes. And it's a marvelous experience to have that happen. You're really so slothful. Just be patient. Don't do anything. Be kind. Be compassionate. Let go. No control. If that's the mind, it's sloth and torpor. If the mind was mine, I could tell it not to be this way. But because the mind isn't anatta, isn't a self, then I can't control this mind. That's what the Buddha said in Atalakana Sutta. So leave it alone. Just allow it to be. Don't get involved. Don't go making more delusion. And after a short while, fascinating to see that sloth and torpor just dissipate like the mist in the early morning, or like the darkness when the sun comes up. You don't have to wish the darkness away in the morning. You know, if you just wait, soon, cause and effect, the laws of nature, the sun will come up. The sun will come up, you start to see clearly without your flashlights. This is actually what happens with sloth and torpor vanishing. And then you just got this beautiful, peaceful strength of mindfulness. A mindfulness which doesn't move. It's just there, just watching. It doesn't move because there's no illusory self pushing it backwards and forwards. This house builder, this controller, this doer, this illusion of a self thinking I'm in control and in charge of this whole process of meditation, enlightenment, whatever else you really want, that's completely taken away. You're just still. You just wait in that stillness. You're not asking for anything. You're not expecting anything. You don't want anything. Because all expecting and wanting is a movement of a mind which takes away from the stillness. You're into peace, into stillness. And you've got peace and stillness, that's good enough. And you just sit there and just watch as the peace consolidates, as the stillness gets even more frozen. Just watch as just all these stages of meditation happen. I've said that before, the stages of meditation are not what you make happen. They're just signposts on the journey. Just like me, just sitting in a van going into town. I don't do the driving. You just watch. Now you go through Serpentine, now you go through Byford, now you go through Armidale, now you go into Perth, now you go to Narumau. Just stages on the journey. This is what happens. You just watch, sitting there doing nothing, literally, 100%, being still, being peaceful. And you see present moment awareness. Now it's silence. I didn't do that. Just here it comes by itself. And then the breath comes up. You didn't do that. Just the breath came. Just this is the territory which you're passing. Now the breath is beautiful. It's okay. That's neat. But, you know, you don't do anything. Now the nimitta comes up. You never look for it. You never asked it to come. You never told it to go away. It just happens naturally. Then the nimitta is just so brilliant and beautiful. Then you're in jhanas and you keep on going. It just happens naturally. All by itself. You didn't do a thing. All you did is just maintain your peace. Kept the stillness. So the hindrances never had a chance. But Mara, the controller, was completely confounded. You went in a different direction, the direction of a Buddha, not the direction of the world. You went according to anatta. No one in here? How can you do anything? You didn't follow delusion. You followed wisdom, the path of the saints. This is actually how we meditate. Actually how we get this beautiful, powerful mindfulness. Once you get into this way of meditating, it's so easy. Easy thing to do. So much joy. So much peace. There's no pride there, which happens because there's no self. There's no things of, oh, I'm a great meditator, or I'm a terrible meditator. There's no frustration when sometimes the meditation doesn't work, because that's just cause and effect. It's not your meditation. You're just content, you're peaceful still. You keep building up more peace and more stillness, and then you get more jhanas. You keep doing the work, which is no work, peacefulness and stillness, and these things happen by themselves. Just like the worker just goes to work every day. On Friday you get your pay packet. You don't expect the pay packet every day. Nature isn't that way. You can't get paid every moment. But you can be at peace with every moment. You can be still with every moment. You can be content with every moment. You can renounce this doing and controlling every moment. You can confound Mara every moment. You just say, no, controller. No, Mara. I'm just going to let go. Doing nothing. No one in here. There ain't anything. So that way that we can really get into this meditation, we find that this is just so easy at any time to get those powerful meditations. It blows your mind away. You follow that path. You do this. And you sit in your hut. You may be meditating for years and you haven't seen it. And then suddenly you just do this and my goodness, you're just blissing out. You think it's just, oh, this is how it is. It's just so easy. This is how you get into these great jhanas, just like these great monks and nuns of old and present time. It's just delusion is the problem. Not seeing clearly. Insight. Sometimes people just get insight, full arahat, in just one moment. When they got their insight, yeah, that was the point. And then, of course, even for an anagami, just jhanas are just easy. Why for an anagami, let alone an arahat, jhanas are easy? Because they see non-self. They're not controllers anymore. The ragas of, you know, sensory desire, ill will, have just disappeared. They've seen sakaya ditti. There's no one in here, no self. That's what makes a meditation easy. Remember, this meditation and non-self, these are so important. Two important things which go together. Samadhi and, you know, insight, they're not separate things. Ajahn Chah kept on saying that vipassana and samatha are the same. You get the insight, you use your insights, you use your knowledge, you use your understanding of the suttas. Anatta, non-self, 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 non-self. How can there be anybody in charge? So who's meditating anyway? If there's someone meditating, the hindrances are just around the corner. They're probably underlying it already. You're feeding those hindrances. and the hindrances of feeding the delusion. It keeps on going. And one day you just give it a try of giving up, non-doing, sitting there. No expectations, no measuring. Sometimes people come up and say, oh, they did that, but it didn't work. What do you mean it didn't work? You want it to work. What are you wanting? Give up all wanting. Give up all these expectations and measurings, and then it happens. As soon as you don't want something, then it comes. So give it up. Abandon. Renounce. Buddha said that. You've heard that. You know that's true. So stop messing around by trying hard. And then you just go back and you get inspired and you just sit there. Remember what to do. There's no one in here. Who's going to do anything? And you stop. You know that story, that little novice comes to mind? Which little novice, when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? Because Ajahn Chah was giving this long talk. The range retreat has been going 4 weeks. When is this range retreat going to stop? When is this range retreat going to stop? When am I going to get into jhana? When am I going to really get rid of these defilements? When am I going to get this nimitta? When? Stop, for goodness sake. Stop wanting. As soon as that novice stopped. He's only a little novice. He hadn't been meditating as long as half of you. A little novice. And he just stopped. He just went into this lovely jhana. Came out afterwards, this happiest little novice in the whole of Ubon, probably that day. Just he blissed out. He pressed the letting go button. And of course, if he was smart, he would have understood a lot of anatta there. A lot of non-self. He also understood about how you can bliss out, how you can get into these jhanas, how they happen. All of you are driving your meditation, steering it this way and steering it that way, your feet are still on the pedals. Our new car's got cruise control. Just press the button and you take your feet off the pedals. This is like jhana meditation, it's all cruise control. Take your feet off the pedals. Just press a little button, letting go. Just take your feet off. And then your car just goes smoothly along the freeway to Nibbana. That's what happens. You let go. So, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Do it. Stop. And you find as the mind just goes in on itself. Goes in and in and in and in. Just because peace starts to build up. That peace is happiness. The happiness is power. Just you get into this letting go business. Be careful, because sometimes you're not used to fully abandoning. You get into controlling again. Some people get nimittas and then they go, wow, they try and make it this way and that way. They wonder, is this the right nimitta or is the wrong nimitta? Stop that. You just be at peace whatever happens. You've got the most stupid, ridiculous nimitta, just be at peace. Who cares? It's just nature, this is all it is. Things arise, things pass away. Nothing to do with you. So just like grass and leaves, whatever happens, grass and leaves of the Jeta Grove, not me, not mine. Here you are, just sitting, just stupid thing happening in your mind, nothing to do with me. Beautiful things happening in your mind, nothing to do with me. Beautiful nimittas, not mine. Leave them alone. Then they stay with you. When you try and own them and grab them, possess them, of course they disappear. You leave them alone and they just develop, they just grow, they blossom. And you just go into these wonderful places of non-self where the doer is gone. The potential to do has vanished. That is a signpost of the jhanas, especially the second jhana. Potential to do completely vanished. Oh, what bliss. Nothing to do. Can't do anything. You can imagine what we mean by peace, stillness. Nothing moves. And the energies just keep building up. And just bliss upon bliss upon bliss. Because the energy of stillness is now so strong. There's so much happiness. That happiness is the power of the mind. You come out of those power states, you still maintain a lot of power. Want to remember past lives? Easy. Psychic powers, this is where they come from. Use that superpower of mindfulness where you can just stop dead still. Remember what's gone on in your jhana. And you see these beautiful, powerful, profound teachings of the Buddha. And how true they all are. And how the Buddha was such a fantastic teacher. He taught. And just banging people on the head all the time, but still people don't see it. And there it's in black and white, just so obvious, so clear. And what do people do? Right, I'm going to do enlightenment now. Right, I'm going to strive. I'm going to struggle. I'm going to get this. I'm going to. Just abandon all of that silly stuff if you want to walk in the footsteps of a Buddha. Otherwise, you can be here for 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Still be just going in the wrong direction. I mentioned this in a similar years ago. It's just the path to enlightenment, just crossing from this shore to the other shore, using the Buddha's simile. That shore to the other shore is just narrower than the stream which runs through our monastery. You can step over from one side to the other side. It's that narrow. The trouble is that people keep on going up and down the banks, the same old directions. Going up, wanting, craving. Going down, wanting to get rid of things, ill will. Now wanting, now wanting to get rid of. Desire, aversion, aversion, desire, going up and down the same way. Not seeing this other way of going, perpendicular to what you've normally been used to. A way of acting which you've never done before. Going perpendicular, right angles, to everything you've ever been conditioned and done before. Doing something really original. And that's stopping. And then you find you just step over the stream. And you get into jhana so quickly. And if you can actually understand what that step is, you understand how to get nibbana, how to let go. Do that plenty of times and you know just the way across. Abandoning, letting go. Renouncing, freedom, non-self, liberation. So there it is for you. So don't mess around. Don't do anything. See if you can be the courageous ones. The ones who do things which no other people do. Don't go in the way of the ordinary Putuchana. Go the way of the Aryas. The way of those who have abandoned their self. The empty ones. Those who are free. That's a Dharma talk for tonight.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sangam.